Pubs are an institution central to Irish culture. James Joyce set novels in them, and Ireland's provisional government in the early 1900s held cabinet meetings in one. Since the mid-1980s, interior designers have been studying Irish pubs to see what makes them such successful social environments, then applying that knowledge to hundreds of new Irish-style bars around the world. Yet at the same time, preservationists say the classic Victorian and Edwardian pubs of Ireland are being destroyed in the name of modernization. From Dublin, NPR's Rick Carr reports.
In James Joyce's Ulysses, Leopold Bloom posits a brain teaser. Good puzzle, he says, would be cross Dublin without passing a pub. In Joyce's day, it was probably impossible. Still is today, Dubliners say, unless one enters each pub through the front and leaves through the back, technically avoiding passing a pub. Chris Lowry has passed through most of Dublin's pubs in his role as pub critic for the daily paper The Irish Independent. Lowry reviews a bar a week, and for the very epitome of the Irish pub, he heads just off Dame Street, right at the center of Dublin, to a place called the Stag's Head.
Which is the best bar in the world. It's the best in Dublin, and therefore it doesn't get any better.
The Stag's Head hasn't changed much since it opened at the end of the 19th century. It's small, warm, and welcoming. A frosted glass window runs 14 feet from the tiled floor to an intricate wood ceiling and lets in a shaft of sunlight that falls on the bar's namesake, a hunting trophy hanging above the cash register. Just below that, there's a clock, which is either 15 minutes slow or has just plain stopped.
Time is not a very important concept, if that clock even works. It's certainly not looked at very often.
Timelessness, Chris Lowry says, is one of the reasons why the Stag's Head is so great. It's also built on a human scale, he says, and it makes you want to stick around and chat. It's quiet. There's no TV, no music playing. It serves a good pint of Guinness at its proper room temperature. And its staff is practiced in the art of crack. That's the Gaelic word for fun. In other words, they're entertainers, in a sense. They know how to banter. Frank Scanlon, who's tending bar at the Stag's Head, says a pub is nothing without a professional behind the bar.
That's what I like in a pub anyway, like the service and the banter as well, like where a bar person will talk to you. Like in some pubs, they don't talk to you at all. Like.
Some of those bars might as well hire robots, Scanlon says. Pub critic Chris Lowry says the combination of the human touch and design elements has made pubs one of Ireland's top tourist draws. And over the past decade or so, it's helped turn them into an important export. Paul Nolan is marketing director of the McNally Design Group, which has built hundreds of pubs and installed them on five continents. Standing in the door of a bar called Cis Madden's on Dublin's east side, Nolan says every one of them is built on principles you can find in just about any Irish village or at a place like this, which, in fact, Nolan's company dismantled in County Kerry and moved lock, stock, and beer barrels to Dublin.
The concept, the whole trick about an Irish pub is that you force people to talk to each other. And you can see by the design here, it's tight spaces, lots of screens. And what we're trying to do, and as much as possible, is force people together with no distractions.
That goes back centuries, Nolan says. Pubs emerged as an Irish institution during the period of English rule, when the Irish were forbidden from gathering in public. So they gathered in one another's homes, and one house in each village became the public house, or pub.
And to a large degree, particularly outside of the main urban areas, that's what they remain. A place where people come to meet up with their neighbours and friends, and to talk politics, talk education, talk sport, talk about the world.
Nolan's firm has designed and built pubs for clients in Shanghai, Buenos Aires, Amman, Jordan, Tashkent, Uzbekistan, and two in Novosibirsk, Siberia. They've also built a bunch in Italy, the result of a craze that started when the Irish soccer team qualified for the 1991 World Cup, which was held in Italy.
And what happened there was you had up to 20, 30, 40,000 Irish people migrating to Italy for 3 to 4 weeks. They infected the Italians with the Irish ethos of you'll be a long time dead. And the following year, we had a huge increase in Italians coming over here to tour Ireland. And in that year and the year after, 91 and 92, it's no coincidence that we built and installed 75 pubs across Italy.
Nolan says his firm helps clients select locations, then designs the fittings. The bars, fixtures, and furniture are built in a workshop near Dublin Airport. This bar will be installed in Philadelphia. Some boxes near the door are addressed to the suburbs of Washington, D.C. Nolan says his firm's job is, in essence, to sell Irishness around the world. To that end, almost everything is built by hand, much like the Victorian masterpieces in the Stag's Head. The pubs are finished with paint and floor tile like what you'd find in Ireland, and the design group trains the bar staff in how to approximate crack. The final detail is old bric-a-brac. McNally Group employs 3 people full-time to scour the world for suitable antique tchotchkes. Just off the shop floor, 25,000 items sit on warehouse shelves, baskets, bottles and jars, musical instruments, and a stack of signs, ads for Guinness and road signs showing the way to Tipperary.
In every pub we do, we put in 2 or 3 original pieces, but there isn't just isn't enough to go around. So what we do is we get these signs in, which are reproductions, but we then go through a process of distressing them to make them look aged.
Paul Nolan says designing and building pubs for overseas clients is an intensely competitive business. A half dozen or so Irish firms bid for jobs. Ireland itself, meanwhile, seems to be having a pub crisis. Michael Smith is chairman of the preservationist group Antashka, the Irish National Trust. He says 10 years ago, there were 35 more or less authentic old pubs in Dublin.
I think it's true to say there's not one entirely intact pub left in the whole city of Dublin dating from the Victorian era. And it's a strange phenomenon that we're exporting what is widely regarded as one of our great cultural successes, while at the same time we're destroying the original thing in its native place.
This is not to say that Dubliners have stopped going out to bars. Dozens of new places have opened over the past few years, frequently on the sites of old pubs. Smith says the old gems that remain, including the Stag's Head, have, quote, modernized, if even a tiny bit, to their detriment. Many of the new places are cool, Euro-style cafe bars. Others are cavernous institutions that hold more than 1,000 patrons at once. The design and management of the new places, Smith says, seem to discourage the quiet, the sense of community, and that idea of crack that defined the old ones. Smith says it's happening because the Irish economy is thriving.
In this country, the past is associated to too great an extent with poverty and lack of opportunity, and across a whole range of our society, we are, I think, throwing out the baby with the bathwater as we move to being a cutting, thrusting, modern economy.
In a new Euro-style club in Dublin's Temple Bar neighborhood, Paul Clarkin is looking out at an expanse of cinder block, polished cement, and burnished metal. This bar is so cool it doesn't even seem to have a name. Instead of a sign, there's a big metal torch burning outside. Clarkin runs an Irish architecture website called Arcera. He says the economic boom has given this generation of young Dubliners the opportunity to see what nightlife is like in New York, Paris, and Tokyo, and they want that at home. Meanwhile, the economy has driven up rents in Dublin, so bar owners try to improve business by reinventing their places as the city's latest and flashiest.
They feel they have to get the return out, I suppose, to paying that much for them in the first place. And a relaunch is a good excuse for publicity, even if it does cost you $500,000 to do it up.
Clarkin says the Euro-style bars don't bother him as much as the gigantic places Dubliners have taken to calling super pubs. It's not just their size that bothers him, it's the fact that they're trying to imitate certain aspects of the older places. In other words, Clarkin says as he stands outside one, the city is being overrun by fake Irish pubs.
The whole thing about the bars isn't right. There's nothing right from the bar staff down to the ambience, down to the fact that there's no regulars.
Inside, Clarkin says the design details make no sense together, like they've been lifted willy-nilly from disparate pubs. Take the floor here, for example.
There was a strong ecclesiastical feel about many of the 19th century Dublin bars. Indeed, I think the Stag's Head was actually designed by an architectural draftsman who normally did churches. And this sort of floor tile is something you would see in a 19th century convent or religious building, but not to this extreme. It's just like goes everywhere. There is no edging, there's no pattern. It's just like it's put in to break up the floor. So over there we see the wooden flooring just running into the tiles, and then a different tile pattern there, a different tile pattern here.
Pub critic Chris Lowry says this place was once the site of Regan's, a small pub with room for 50 drinkers, a man from the country behind the bar, he says, and a single 40-watt light bulb over a pool table. Now it's McTurkle's of Hoggin Green, with room for hundreds and a name more reminiscent of Merry Old England than anything genuinely Irish. It's cluttered with bric-a-brac, the bar staff is silent, and the Guinness is served ice cold. Lowry says Regan's became McTurkle's because, in addition to rising rents, there simply aren't enough liquor licenses in Dublin.
Instead of deregulating, producing a lot of licenses, they kept pretty much the same number of licenses, and the older, smaller places were knocked down and replaced with this.
Paul Nolan of McNally Design Group says his firm tries to avoid building these kinds of places. The new pubs, he says, are designed to attract younger customers between 18 and 30 who tend to drink more. He says classic spots like the Stag's Head will always do well.
Once you go beyond the 30-year-old, they tend to migrate back to the traditional pubs, so I think there'll always be a place for them. I just think it's a fashion, it's a trend, and I think once we've got through that and got a bit bored with it, we look back for the original of the species.
Pub critic Chris Lowry says that's not comforting. Remember, he says, pub is short for public house, a place where all segments of Irish society mingle.
There never used to be a divide between a young person's pub and an old person's pub. I mean, this place used to be frequented by older people, but a lot of students from Trinity College, which is just next door, would also come here. So there never was a problem with getting young people into pubs. And if you wanted to build a specific young person, a disco or a nightclub, if there had been the licenses, we could have just built more.
Chris Lowry says renovation has desecrated at least one pub that should have been a national shrine, the Mulligan House, one of the settings for James Joyce's Finnegan's Wake. Over the past 2 years, about a half dozen of Dublin's remaining Victorian and Edwardian pubs have been protected as landmarks, including Davy Byrne's, where the provisional government met, and Lowry's favorite bar, the Stag's Head. Rick Carr, NPR News, Dublin.